Good afternoon. We'll reconvene this meeting of the Education Conference Committee to order. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have reviewed and have put in writing the gone over the issues to we agreed to accept. So is there a page here that could? Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, your staff hands out stuff? Wow. Thank you.
We have all but two of our members.
Slam. Have you got the right one? Okay.
Yep, thank you.
Oh, look at how neat they made it.
So if everybody has this, we have accepted the early graduation achievement, the SAMES. We took the Senate because down in the reallocating general education part of that, there is our language is somewhat different than yours because you have an additional para relative to the military part. Since that wasn't in there, that maybe we may want to revisit that. Separate from this, since we were just dealing with SAMES. I think the safe schools, secondary and elementary sparsity, and sparsity revenue, those three provisions from the House, also the Kitson Central School, we've accepted the Northland Community School, the Senate position. You apparently think you don't have a provision in there that's actually in there, so you may want to try to convince us of that at some point. But right now that was the same, and I think we've put that provision in. And the 8 and 9 House positions are related to the all of the words in getting here to the special education growth factor. And the forecast is also the same.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other comments from House or Senate members? Well, thanks for the information, Senator. We appreciate it. At this time, if we could have those here who are here to discuss the teacher effectiveness bill come forward. Specifically, I think I have a list here. Is that Ms. Schwab here? Not yet? Okay. How about Ms. Powell? And Ms. Yeah, go ahead. Come on up. Please. Then Ms. Donaldson, you'll be on deck. Hi. Yep. Welcome to the conference committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jerry Powell, and I'm here as a representative of Students First. We are an education reform advocacy group that was founded in December of 2010. We are working across the country on important education reform legislation. In April, we launched a nationwide campaign called Save Great Teachers. And the focus of this campaign is to educate the public on the importance of ending damaging last-in, first-out policies, which many states, including Minnesota, require. And this dictates that in the event of layoffs, teachers who have the least seniority are the first ones laid off in the event that layoffs are necessary. This is obviously an issue of acute importance during the past few years, which we've experienced significant fiscal challenges across the country with the economic downturn. There are three key reasons that research shows why last in, first out policies are damaging. Firstly, the research shows that under last in, first out policies, some of the most effective teachers end up being the ones that get laid off. When an effective teacher who only has 1 or 2 years of experience is laid off, that could mean that a student loses the opportunity to gain what that brilliant teacher has to offer, and all because of an arbitrary system. Secondly, we find that more teachers have to be laid off because teachers who are newer teachers are paid less than more experienced teachers, which means that you end up having to lay off many more teachers to make up for the gap that you're trying to close in the budget. And finally, we find that last in, first out policies affect high need areas far greater than higher income areas, because newer teachers tend to be concentrated in lower income areas, and so these schools tend to be at greater risk for losing more teachers because they have more newer teachers, and this inevitably exacerbates some of the problems that we see with the achievement gap, where students in lower income areas we're finding much less achievement in those students than in students who are in higher income areas. And so obviously having a policy like last in, first out is just contributing to that problem. One of the things that I wanted to be sure to advocate for here today is to make sure that in the omnibus bill that we pass, to make sure that last in, first out is eliminated from the Senate language, and that the House language that actually does eliminate last in, first out is adopted in the Senate language as well. Just in closing, I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify on this very important issue, and I hope that that we will agree to end last in, first out policies in Minnesota.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ms. Donaldson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mary Donaldson. I'm the director of Concordia Creative Learning Academy, and it's an honor to be before you again today, as scary as it always is. Give me middle schoolers any day, but presenting here, I tend to get a little nervous. Thank you again for this opportunity. And before I begin with what I have to say, we have testified many times on this with my teachers. And I want to make it clear that this isn't a union or a non-union bill. It's not about charter schools. It's not about traditional schools. It is about education. And I want to say it's about children, because we want to do what's right for children. But who doesn't want to do what's right for children? I want to say there's nothing more important out there right now than having an effective teacher in every single classroom. I cannot say that enough. And I've been around a long time, 30 years. I've been through every outcome-based education, grad standards. I've been through it all. But right now, I cannot state that there isn't anything more important. You know, you start throwing out the facts, and you know them. We're 49th out of 50th in the achievement gap. But did you read the Star and Tribune 2 weeks ago? That's also the unemployment gap. So the correlation to what's going on in the classroom is going on out there. Right now we have 10,000 third graders in Minneapolis that can't read. Charter school partners, if you want to know where the source of it, I don't make that up. 10,000 that cannot read by third grade. 9,000 that cannot read in St. Paul. That's not right. And you know what the answer is? It is an effective teacher. And I believe that with my heart and soul, because I was a teacher at one time, way back when. And when I was hired in the 80s, my principal said they put all the applications in the back of the convertible, and what was ever left at the end, that's who they hired. But I did take the teacher perceiver test, and I went and taught 34 first graders my first year. Loved it. I was teaching. All of a sudden, April 1st came, pink slipped. I'm going, pink slipped? What's pink slip mean? You're done. And so I was done, went to another district, hired. Next year, pink slip. The next year, the third year, pink slip. Eventually, I did get tenure. Eventually, I did. And then when I started teaching, how did I become a better teacher? How was I evaluated? Steps and lanes. So the more credits I took, the better teacher I was. I remember going on a Friday night to take newspapers in the classroom at Hamlin, Friday night and Saturday, because then I could do my lane change in 2 weeks and get my $4,000 pay increase. That's how I was evaluated. How I became was from the kids in my classroom. I didn't have the professional experience outside of the classroom. Then I became a principal. And as a principal, I had the opportunity to go out to Princeton one summer and work with Charlotte Danielson and develop her model. So I came back and used that. But that didn't change student achievement. The second year I was a principal, this was my first grade classes. I had three wonderful teachers. And to teach first grade, you have to be a saint. I only last about 6 years down there. But you have to be a saint because they need to learn to read that year. It's very important. I had a first-year teacher, a second-year teacher, and a third-year teacher. Do you know what happened to all of them in April? They're all gone. And we go to the gym, and it's posted, and I get in my building whoever bids on that spot. And they come into my building. Do they agree with my philosophy? I start all over. Teachers are people of goodwill. They truly are. I love teachers, but there are incompetent people of goodwill out there. They truly, truly are. They need to move on. But how do they move on without knowing if they're effective or not? So now I wind up in a charter school. And I like to say, and I'm sure each one of you know this, that there is not a classroom in my building that I would not put my own babies. All of you went to school. You all had ineffective teachers. I had Miss Smiley in high school, okay? Her hair was high, she smelled of alcohol every day, but I got through, didn't I? She stayed there. My parents at that time didn't go in and complain, but then you have your own babies, and it's another generation. And those of you that have been through it, I made sure that my babies had the effective teacher. I requested, I researched. And if they didn't, then I went in with my education lingo and said, my child's right-brained, and he's a kinesthetic learner, so he needs to be in that class, and the principal moved them. Who is the voice for the children now that don't have that voice? It's not there. It truly isn't. And by having this bill, having effective teachers, and how do you know what an effective teacher is? You cannot do it on Charlotte Danielson or Madeline Hunter or any of the pre-post conferences or the walkthroughs. It's data. It is. It is data. And you can come into my school, and every student can tell you they've gone from point A from point B, but what we added this year is every teacher can take that NWA data and tell you that on phonemic awareness, my classroom went up 42 points. But go across the hall to Ms. Qualey's room, only 21 points. But her computation went up 92%, and mine went up 89%. So you do that in December, and you sit and you talk. Guess what they do? Exchange ideas based on data. You have to have some form of data. And in the House bill, it has that, the rating. Going up 1 year based on data. That is so important. And it has worked. I have seen my teachers improve based on that data. And I guess finally, we can't wait any longer. I taught for many years out in the suburbs, okay? And then 6 years ago, I came inner city. We have a number of children who cannot wait another year for an effective teacher to be in every classroom. It's got to be done now. And you say, Mary, you don't understand politics. I don't. That's why I'm not there. I'm over here. We have to take the risk. The state demographer says right now is a time for heroes. It's a time for people to be disruptors. Pass the bill. Get it through. And make sure there's an effective teacher in every classroom. Right now, I have a child, and I'll close with a story. Her name is Destiny. You've seen the movie Precious? Okay, she's my Precious. She came to us in fifth grade and didn't know how to read. First grade reading level, second grade math level. The last 2 years, she's gone from that. She just tested the other day, 242 in math. If you know what that is, that's middle eighth grade. Okay, sixth grade. She's at sixth grade reading. But you know who did that? Not me. Not her family. I can go into that in detail. Her mother didn't graduate from high school. Oh, that's another percentage. Percentage we're not happy about. Last year, 67% of my parents didn't graduate from high school. This year, 72% of my parents didn't graduate from high school. Destiny's mom didn't graduate, but you know, the next step is her grandmother didn't graduate from high school. So back to Destiny. Anyway, she's proud. She's going somewhere, but it's because she had an effective teacher, and that teacher was based on how are they doing with the data in math and reading. So thank you for listening to me, and good luck.
Thank you, Ms. Donaldson. We appreciate your testimony. And as always, thanks for everything you're doing over at Concordia Creative Learning Academy. And I wanted to name my daughter Destiny when she was born, but just for no other reason than at some point in high school, a boy would say, "Tonight, I have a date with Destiny." Ms. Schwab, No, she's going to be a nun. She's not going to date in high school. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Michelle Schwab. I understand that you are reviewing the omnibus bill, and I'm here in support of the House language in reference specifically to the teacher evaluation and LIFO language. I stand before you as a licensed teacher, principal, and superintendent. I am currently a central office administrator in charge of professional development, teacher evaluation, and QComp in a large second-ring suburb here in Minnesota. During my 8 years as a teacher, I earned the prestigious Prodigy Award, the Senator's Award for Excellence, led our school to the National Blue Ribbon Award, and our school was ranked number one in the state for teaching reading, with over 80% of our students being on grade level. All of this occurred with 53% of our students on free or reduced lunch, consistent mobility rates, almost half of our population receiving ESL special ed or title services. As a probationary teacher, I consistently worked long hours to successfully meet the needs of my students, while the teachers in the classroom next to me put in only their contractual hours, making twice the salary, with no repercussions for whether or not they were effective or ineffective. When standardized tests came along, and QComp, I was hopeful that we would finally look at teacher effectiveness based on several data points that were very clearly communicated. I was wrong. It was my time working in the School Improvement Division for the Minnesota Department of Education that I traveled the state, and it really opened my eyes to the statewide issue. Progress is being held hostage by its own constituents. Long-term contractual language related to the last-in, first-out practices that we have, the career-long contracts that we are allowing, the rare evaluation cycles that are occurring, the protocols for releasing staff, and the pay for participation in professional development have limited the efforts of innovation by new administrators like myself. As a current central office administrator, I could share with you an exhausting list of examples of how this affects us and our students. But I'm going to share one with you that is quite brief. During New Teacher Workshop Week this year, we hired 73 new teachers in our district, which is the average hiring cohort. And we inducted these 73 teachers that had quite a bit of experience outside of our state and within our state. Many of them had been tenured in other districts. Some of them had national board certification even. I am proud to share that it was also our most diverse candidate pool that we have hired since I've been in the district. However, 2 weeks ago, approximately 90% of those students, 90% of those teachers were all released. Those layoffs were based on the last-in, first-out practice that we have. Imagine being considered highly qualified in another state or district, being nationally board certified, and then being told that your contract is not being renewed by a district that personally recruited you or had no regard for your professional performance related to students in your classroom. My colleagues and I worked incredibly hard to recruit, interview, train, and support these highly sought-after diverse candidates, and we spent approximately $392,000 supporting them in 1 year. And for what? I'm concerned about the significant difference in language between the House and the Senate bills. Specifically, I support the House position that requires a statewide evaluation system that includes student growth data to be included in a teacher's performance evaluation. This allows us to effectively end LIFO basing layoffs on teacher effectiveness with their students. Whereas the Senate bill, specifically on page R35, states that only an increase in the teacher's salary will be contingent on student growth. So not the entire teacher's salary, or not 50%, or not 20%, but just the amount of growth that a teacher has in salary. A greater concern is on page R23 of the Senate language, which seems to continue the LIFO language and the provisions, whereas the House language seems to be very clear on how the layoffs will occur. The monotonous cycle of recruiting, hiring, training, and supporting and releasing of quality teachers based on an arbitrary longevity race needs to end. As a new generation of educational administrators, we desperately need the flexibility to hire and retain the best quality teachers in our classrooms. We need to do away with seniority language and the entitlement of these lifelong contracts. I urge you to adopt the teacher evaluation framework and the unrequested provisions that are in the House bill. As an administrator in charge of professional development and teacher evaluation in one of your districts, I think the implementation of a framework needs more detail. It could be counterproductive to the goal that we're trying to do, which is make sure that teachers know exactly what's expected of them in order for them to retain their positions. If you neglect to include further detail, I'll give you an example of what is currently happening. Right now, there is a policy about professional development on the books. And right now, school districts are allowed to offer internal grad credits, as my constituent had mentioned earlier. They can offer internal graduate credits for teachers to move on the pay scale. And what this does is when a teacher participates, we call that pay for participation. When a teacher earns these credits for participating, not actually implementing, not actually measuring their effectiveness, but just participating, it inflates our salary scale. So, yes, this results in higher pay without any evidence of learning transpiring for students. Most professional development programs are based on the completion of attendance rather than on implementation results. So if new teachers with new ideas are being released each year, like I told you earlier, and we are allowing our veteran teachers to receive all of their training in-house, you can imagine what this creates. And as someone that went to a highly respected college, I begin to question that if districts are allowed to lower the level of academic rigor required of our administrators and teachers for steps and lane changes, we could predict the possibility that will happen with the evaluation system if you don't detail it carefully. I ask you and encourage you to add greater detail to the evaluation system language. If these provisions are not adopted, you are creating a deficit for administrators like me that want to act in the best interest of students. I have inherited a very long list and history of language that is very counterintuitive to what I think we all want. For example, performance is not considered in school layoff policy currently. Rather, seniority is the major consideration. We will continue to invest in new teachers and watch that funding walk out the door 9 months later. I understand that these ideas are creating a sea change, and I believe it is the right thing to do. We must take the hard choice in putting students first. And I ask you to think about the high achievers in education like me and my constituents. Consider the infliction we endure every day operating under these outdated policies. Even though we don't show up in masses at the Capitol and draw national attention, are gossiped about sometimes behind our backs by peers for not keeping the status quo, and are often snubbed as being too young to make a difference, we believe in what we do, and that is we make a difference for students. We don't apologize or make excuses for our laser-like focus for student results. So I ask you to please support the language of the House and the language to end LIFO, or LIFO as it's called, and require student data to please be part of the teacher evaluation and retention process. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Senator Olson.
Thank you. Ms. Schwab, just a couple questions. Oh, sure. I don't know, you didn't note, I think you were making some legitimate criticisms of what we now allow in terms of staff development and how it's used. Mm-hmm. Did you note that the Senate repealed that whole section?
I'm aware of that, but I do believe that districts will continue to still offer credit for lane change.
So that leads to my next question, Chair, Ms. Schwab. Do you support the retention of the current structure of payment of teachers? You seem to be saying that it's okay, just do it differently in terms of the lane change and the steps and lanes. Do you think the steps and lanes method of compensation or structure for payment is sustainable and workable within for the direction that we need to be going in education today?
Ms. Schwab.
Senator, I think that's an interesting question. I think the state tried to overcome the steps and lanes with QCOMP, and QCOMP requires us to restructure a pay scale for teachers. And what I saw many school districts do as a person that went out and helped evaluate the QCOMP programs in other districts was that they changed the names on the steps and lanes. Teachers were still earning graduate credits to move across, and years down were still going by years, or the passing of a performance evaluation that was only like once every 3 years.
Senator Olson.
So, Ms. Schwab, are you suggesting that we should keep that system, or do you have any suggestions for how it should be changed?
The QCOMP system
has...
No, not the QCOMP system. The compensation structure. Obviously, there was an effort. I know that it was not put into law in the strength that it was originally proposed. Mm-hmm. It was weakened. Mm-hmm. And but having said that, the system is hard to change.
It is.
So, but are you suggesting that we should just accept that and go on from there? Or do you believe that there should be efforts to change that?
Ms. Schwab.
Senator, when I look at our bottom line, which is student achievement and turning out great citizens, I don't know how steps and lanes will get us there.
Thank you.
Senator Olson. Any other questions from members of the committee? Mr. Schwab, thank you very much for your testimony. We greatly appreciate it. Ms. Donaldson, you're back.
Yes, I'm back.
All right,
Chair.
Well, we'll go ahead and hear from you, but in the meantime, sure. Jim Bartholomew, if you want to come on up, if you wish to testify.
Senator Olson, that's the question that everyone's asking. We did that this afternoon. I think teachers should be paid more than administrators. So how do you do that on the scale? So the board gives me money based on performance. So you have to have something that's based on performance. And that's how we use it for evaluation of teaching. So, thank you.
So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both. The Senate bill did at least have a linkage from evaluation and student performance to salary, whether it was going as far as it should or not. But the House does not have any connection to that. I hope you note that.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. It does, but it doesn't list the particulars. I think we've got to make that be really particular. I like that language, but the particulars that are in the House bill takes it one step further that I'm in favor of.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Donaldson, it was referring to the compensation.
Yes, yes.
There is no linkage to compensation.
Mr. Chair, yes, you're correct. Thank you.
Representative Peterson, did you want to chime in at all? Or?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Olson. The rationale behind the House language, just to give some insight into the pay-for-performance decision, is that in order to have a pay-for-performance, you need to have a measure to gauge what performance is, and you need to set benchmarks that determine and differentiate levels of performance before you tie compensation to it. So while I agree with the Senate language in principle that performance matters, you need to be able to measure performance in order to compensate on that basis.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd like to give you just one example of why we so strongly support House File 945 and Senate File 636, its companion, and would encourage your inclusion of them in the finance bill. Later this spring, in a few weeks, one of our major school districts will officially lay off a number of teachers, and they'll do this using a quality-blind, seniority-based process without regard to their effectiveness. But to make matters worse, when the layoff process is complete, teachers, again based on seniority, will begin to bump in and out of schools. And not only does this bumping process last through the summer, but it occasionally goes into the school year as well. And the bumping does two things. It creates instability for staff at the schools, and it can result in the schools and students with the greatest needs getting the least prepared teachers. So it's not only the layoff process, but it's also the bumping into and out of schools and the impact that has. Again, this quality-blind, seniority-based system does not serve the best interest of, we would argue, teachers and especially students. House File 945 and Senate File 636 address these issues by providing constructive evaluations and recognizing teachers based on their effectiveness. To be sure, there are districts in Minnesota that currently provide strong evaluations and better manage their personnel. But as the following quotes from a January article in the St. Paul paper suggest, these practices are not widespread. Again, this is late January of this year. Across Minnesota, experts say, tenured teachers are getting too few evaluations that tell them too little about how they're doing. A 2007 study of districts in Minnesota and six other Midwestern states found that only one-third of districts spelled out what evaluators should do. And then quoting from a leader from a statewide education association, quote, I can tell you, there are a lot of places where tenured teachers have never seen an evaluation. We're sure the evaluation framework in House File 945 and Senate File 636 can be improved. But at the same time, the framework has been designed to balance the need for some level of consistency and the best efforts of local school districts. And just as importantly, the legislation takes the critical step of providing an alternative to our current quality-blind, seniority-based system for retaining and recognizing teachers with a system that's based on their effectiveness. The process I described earlier that's going to soon begin in the next few weeks unquestionably negatively impacts teachers and students, and it needs to be updated. Thank you, and we'd encourage your support of this critical legislation.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Cecilia Rattel is the last name on the list that I have. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Cecilia Rattel with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm here on behalf of, you know, the model that we've been talking about all session. And I think one thing that needs to be recognized is even though the language is not identical in the two bills, there's absolutely philosophies that are overlapping and that everyone agrees on. And I just urge you guys to have the conversations about what is the most important thing. We all, I think, want a teacher evaluation system that's done on a yearly basis, and we all want student data to matter in that evaluation system. So what's the language that works? In our opinion, we absolutely, you know, love Senator Olson and Representative Peterson's bill that does, you know, give very clear recommendations and structure to districts. The recommendations I'm talking about is the 50% of the local decision, and the direction is the 50% that's pure student growth. And from there, you have the effectiveness ratings. Because the important part in the end of this, when you get to the colorful charts you all have in your packets, is ending LIFO. We all know the last in, first out policies don't work. So how do we make that happen? We have to have a system that's based on effectiveness to do those layoffs. So you have to have an effective evaluation system with an effective modeling that gives you the ratings. And then from there, you can do layoffs that are appropriate for students. And with that, I would be happy to answer any questions. And I thank you all for talking about this.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Rattel. Is there any members of the committee who have a question? Okay, thank you very much. We have a couple more minutes here. Representative Peterson, did you have any comments, or are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about these provisions in the House and Senate bills? Seeing none, any closing comments, Representative Peterson?
Yeah, I'll take the opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo a lot of what Cecilia had said about the common elements between the Senate and the House language, and I think generally we agree that a system based on student achievement should be implemented, and there should be consequences tied to that evaluation system. When I presented House File 945, when I presented House File 9.
With some background music for your presentation, Representative Peterson.
This is kind of getting majestic in here.
It's kind of like Tim Pawlenty's videos that he's got on the internet. It's like action hero Brandon Peterson. So please proceed.
I presented House File 945 as a performance management system centered around student achievement. And I think that there's a differentiation between saying that we're going to evaluate teachers and saying that we're going to have a performance management system built around student achievement. Performance management means many different things. In fact, one of my manager leaders early on in my other job told me that performance management begins long before performance becomes an issue. I think if you look at the House language, House File 945, with the professional development pieces, the upgrade to the professional development language and the requirement to align those to instructional goals indicates that part of the performance management structure. You can't have performance management structure without being able to measure performance. You've got to have a framework in place to actually set achievement benchmarks and goals for instruction and for teachers and for students. And you can't have a performance management system without consequences. There has to be direct employment consequences for the results. Otherwise, you don't have a results-oriented organization. And in order to have an effective system in place, you need all of those things. And that's what we have in the House language. I think there is some disagreement, obviously, between the House and the Senate on which one of those structures and what elements of those structures should be included. I would contend that in order to have, like I said, a performance management system that is comprehensive, you need all of them. And that would be my statement, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Senator Olson?
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Representative Peterson. I hope that members that were at our last conference committee noted the corollary to some of the things that you said are essential. While they're focused on individual teacher evaluation, the literacy incentive revenue is based on a combination of achieving proficiency and on growth. And that is rewarded in terms of dollars to the school. It's to the school district. They are free to use it as they will, but as they improve their achievement of proficiency and their growth, they will get more revenue. It's the first time we've ever had any proposal like that to actually reward effectiveness and achievement, because we have all of that data in that particular category. We have that data. It can be tracked to individual teachers and classrooms and to even the teacher preparation institutions that bring it about. So, we're looking at things in pieces, but at some point we need to recognize the whole, and that there are a number of things that can be done, and I think we should be attempting to get as much strong reform achieved this year as we can. So I just hope you will analyze that from the very criteria that you set forth in your presentation or your closing.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any other comments from members of the committee? With that, we are adjourned from the conference committee. Thank you very much.
That'd be fine. When were you talking?
Brandon. How are you?
I've been sitting here the last hour.
Oh. Sure,
no,
yeah, it was just.